If you're in New Jersey or Nevada or are willing to cross a state line to get there, you can not only bet on Thursday's NFL draft, you can do it in well over 100 different ways. You can bet on who'll be taken first, second, or third. You can bet on the first quarterback taken or how many quarterbacks will be taken. You can bet the over-under on how many SEC players will be taken. You can bet on whether C.J. Henderson will be the first cornerback taken, whether Tristan Wirfs will be the first offensive lineman taken, and whether not one but both of those things will happen. If that sounds obscure to you, consider that the sports betting menu 2 days before the draft was headlined by ping pong from Moscow, soccer from Belarus, basketball from Taiwan, and darts streamed live from players' homes. We'll look at the impact of the shutdown on U.S. sportsbooks and the brief uptick of normalcy that they're anticipating thanks to the most watched NFL draft in history on this episode of SBJ Unpacks. I'm Bill King, joined now by Sarah Slane, a sports betting consultant who, after leading the push for legalized betting across the U.S. for the American Gaming Association, now works with leagues, teams, and media companies on their sports betting strategy. Sarah, it was only 3 years ago that Nevada regulators authorized sportsbooks there to take bets on the NFL draft. And you couldn't even bet on a specific player. It was more by positions. How many quarterbacks would be taken in the first round? How many running backs? When would the first kicker be taken? And over the last couple of years, that expanded bit by bit. You know, last year you could bet on specific players and what slots they would go. I think Kyler Murray, if I recall, was like minus 800 to be the first player taken, which he, of course, was. It was so obvious. Go from that to what it looks like now and all the anticipation and even expectations that the sports books have about this being, you know, an actual economic driver at a time when there really isn't one.
Yeah. So much obviously has changed in the past 3 days, let alone the past 3 years.
Yeah.
In a totally just different place from the perspective of a regulator and a legislator as they're viewing gaming and then more specifically sports betting. And obviously just a tremendous amount of progression on what they're allowing now customers to bet on. And obviously, given the unbelievably unique situation we find ourselves in today, I have to say, you know, having been in the industry for close to 15 years, I've never seen so much partnership among the gaming regulators, the operators, and quite frankly, even the leagues in trying to, you know, pursue what's in the best interest of everyone, which is, you know, providing an interesting entertainment product for consumers that's obviously highly regulated. So, you know, we sort of talk about what's coming down the pike in the next couple of days here with the NFL draft and certainly the progression that we've seen there and with the league and then certainly with the gaming regulators and the operators. And, you know, not only are we going to have the ability to bet online on the draft in Nevada, but also states outside of Nevada, New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And so, you know, it's just a totally different time and different experience. And, you know, I know that the NFL has been, you know, a very good and willing partner in that as well to wanting to work with the regulators. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been an education process for everyone. I remember as you sort of teed up here.
Yeah.
When I was leading the stakeholder effort back in 2015 and until the court ruled in 2018 about sports betting, just the education that had to happen among the leagues and the media companies and law enforcement around gaming and how highly regulated it is. And I think now you're really seeing that come through with gaming regulators giving the green light on some things that they'll approve for betting and certainly the red on others like the presidential election.
Right.
So, you know, just I think a lot of progress and a lot of partnership to move things forward. And hopefully that is a theme that is carried out and beyond the situation we currently find ourselves in.
This whole idea of betting on the draft, if I remember correctly, a lot of the concerns were around the idea that this was something that people people could have a good idea of what was going to happen. People could have access to information that others didn't have access to. And it was based on an individual person's decision, almost like, you know, you think about what the props were that were that regulators would allow. They would allow a coin flip prop, right? But they wouldn't allow how long the national anthem was going to run, because that was something that someone, there was human control. Walk me through a little bit of that, getting comfortable with that, and why this is now something that people see as okay.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I get back to sort of this education process that's had to happen, not, you know, from, I always point to the leagues probably unfairly because I was, you know, wearing my gaming industry hat. But, you know, I would say also from the league perspective to educate the gaming regulators about how, you know, they share information, who has access to certain information. You know, I can tell you just working with regulators on approving different sports that they do run an incredibly robust and thorough process. And, you know, sometimes they are, you know, educated on what happens and who would have that kind of access to information, the sharing of lists of people that, you know, would be prohibited from placing a bet becomes part of that discussion as well. But, you know, I think the shared common goal among the leagues and among the operators and among the regulators has always been promoting integrity and making sure that at the end of the day, that consumer is protected. And that if someone were to have inside information, that they collectively work together then to figure out, you know, how that occurred and preserve and promote the integrity of the sport. So, you know, I think that it's been a couple things. Like I said, I think it's an open dialogue and a communication now between the leagues and the regulators and really diving in and answering questions and understanding, you know, how things work, how information is shared. And then the regulators making an assessment in with what they intend to do, which is protect consumers and, you know, making sure that everything would be on the up and up.
It's interesting. I was scrolling through sort of all the things that you can bet on around this draft, and it even surprised me. I mean, there's some books that say they've got 85 markets, or they've got, which markets, by the way, are bets that you can place for anyone who's listening who hasn't heard it 1,000 times by now. But yeah, you've got all these options, all this stuff you could bet on. Did that surprise even you?
I think right now, look, I think everyone is getting pretty creative. To an extent. I mean, you know, these are not going to be bets that people are getting rich off of.
Right.
I mean, this is about entertainment. I think, you know, I was reading the other day, even Joe Asher, CEO of William Hill, was talking about some of the bets that they're offering. And, you know, he's like, look, we're not going to be making money off of a lot of this stuff. I mean, it is purely entertainment. It is purely, not that it isn't always about entertainment, but, you know, I think when you are so limited in your content and your offerings, you obviously are forced to think a little bit creatively about, you know, some of the bets that you can be offering.
You think about just that minus 800, even on Kyler Murray. Yeah, it was really obvious he was going to be the first pick. Yeah, it did turn out he was the first pick. But if you're a sports book and you take that bet from someone who knows it's going to happen and they make a large enough bet, you can lose a lot of money, right?
Yeah. And again, I think that this always gets back to what's at the heart and where, you know, I would get certainly my feathers ruffled.
Yeah.
Sorry, a little slow here, but I am on my second cup of coffee. But, you know, it's that the operator is the person that's taking the money. There's nothing in it for them when someone's cheating. I mean, they lose money. So, you know, there was always, I felt like, an attempt to kind of pit the leagues against the operators when we truly are in it together. I mean, they don't want that. They don't want someone that's got inside information using that in a way that behooves them. And, you know, the book is then out of money. But, you know, look, I think the books, again, with the regulators, with the leagues, with the law enforcement community, you know, really do work together to identify suspicious transactions. There are a ton of federal requirements when it comes to how reporting happens. And yeah, I mean, to your point, like they're smart. I mean, they're paying attention when they see irregularities happening or a big bet that's being placed. You know, they reserve the right to not take the bet and to look into it further.
Think about regulators and what they're comfortable with, and they've certainly become comfortable with expanding the menu of betting, or even being in states that previously did not authorize but now authorize betting on the draft. Think about all those other sports, though, that we've seen. I mean, you know, if you look down the menu, at William Hill or FanDuel or DraftKings or anyone else, they're all at the beginning, there were only a couple of them, right? But now they all have a pretty similar menu, you know, and it's basically whatever's going on that could be termed sport anywhere around the world. You know, ping pong from Belarus. We're now seeing esports betting. You know, which I think
Bill,
there were
I think
a lot
it's
of concerns
to
around
as table tennis. In case you didn't know that,
I can go with table tennis too. But in our house, we have a table, and we don't call it a table tennis table.
That's right.
But it does. To your point, though, it does look very similar in that you can have bets on individual points, which is, I think, what makes it a popular wager, right? It's that in play betting that people are looking for. But it's from all over the world, after coming out of that span where so much discussion went into integrity and what do you take and what do you not take, and we can't possibly know whether or not, you know, an esports event, for example, a video game, is even actually being played, or whether it's just being simulated. All those concerns seem to be out the window. Is that fair?
I don't think that's fair. You know, I think that every state's regulator does, they do their own due diligence, and they do require, I mean, I can just speak for having gone through this process with a league myself. I mean, the information that they're requiring about the league and the governance structure to ensure then that there is oversight happening, is tremendous. I mean, it's, you know, they never want to be viewed as the one that slipped up,
right. That
something happened under their watch. A lot of regulators come from a law enforcement background, and or they are, you know, usually report up through the law enforcement agency in that state. So if it's the attorney general's office, you know, there is definitely always a direct tie, I think, back into law enforcement. So they do very much view their role as being, you know, the protector of the consumer. They have been there since the beginning, you know, to stamp out illegal activity. And, you know, when the mob was running the casinos back in the days, you know, they brought in this gaming regulatory agency at a state level to do exactly that, which was shut out corruption. And so they very much view their role through that lens. And so while we may be seeing sports right now that, you know, they're allowing people to bet on that we wouldn't have traditionally seen, I mean, it's because the demand just simply was not there. You know, when you have a choice between betting on March Madness and Russian table tennis, you know, I don't think that consumers were flocking down to play Russian table tennis over any tournament game. So, you know, while they seem obscure, and I mean, I can assure you that the regulators would not have accepted. And there are some states that, while Nevada may be accepting some bets, other states are not following their lead. I mean, that's kind of the challenge sometimes, is that it's not truly a one size fits all. Every state has its own regulatory agency. Every state has a different approach. I mean, they generally try to stay, you know, in line with one another, but you will see discrepancies sometimes.
Well, it didn't take long for West Virginia to figure out with the presidential election, right?
Yeah, I got to say that's one I disagree with. You know, and again, a lot of this does come, like you pointed out, come down to different state laws and what's on the books and how gambling is overseen. And, you know, I am of the firm belief, and I remember reading about this at some point in time with elections, that, you know, more transparency, better. It's top of mind. People are talking about it. you know, there is obviously integrity in how voting is happening and being conducted. And so I just, I feel like, you know, I get why a state would have to come out and maybe say that based off their state laws. But I do think I am of the opinion that that should be something that would be or should be legal.
It was interesting, though. I mean, it took about an hour between when the regulators in West Virginia said they were going to allow betting on the presidential election. I think it was about an hour later that the governor's office said, oh, no, we're not. Right. I mean, it went pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I mean, look, leave it sometimes up to politics to drive some of these decisions. It was certainly an interesting move and probably, again, one that we wouldn't be seeing had we not been in this situation right now with just lack of content for betting.
There was so much momentum with states opening up one after another this year. At a pace that, you know, honestly, I think was even ahead of what a lot of analysts expected. Where do you think that goes from here as we enter any sort of a new normal? Mm-hmm. Is that something that state legislators are even going to – I could see it going two ways. I can see it being something that is way, way, way down the list of priorities, or I could see it as something that might generate some tax revenue at a time that they're desperate for it. How do you think it plays out? And I'm sure you're having those conversations about what's going on in those states. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, to your point about being viewed through the lens of, you know, we're just one piece of a multi-pronged, you know, effort in a state. I mean, you do have some states that disproportionately, I think, rely on gaming revenue, like Nevada. I think about 50% of the revenue that goes in the state coffers every month is from gaming. And, you know, what's happening right now is devastating. To have the entire strip shut down, every single casino in that state not operating, is unfathomable. I, you know, lived in Las Vegas back in 2008 and 2009 during the recession, and I remember how brutal that was. I can't even imagine how difficult things are right now for the state and for the governor. So, you know, you're seeing a push by some of the operators, certainly in Nevada. I think the CEO of Wynn had come out and sort of pushing for an opening, a reopening in May. And, you know, I think you're going to hear some of that happening throughout a bunch of states. Now, as it pertains to, and obviously that decision is going to come down to safety and health, as it should. But when we are looking at now mobile, be it sports betting or online casino, and the rapid pace at which that has been moving, I do think that this certainly will push states to move forward. While it may not be the panacea for solving any state budget, I think, you know, the incremental revenue certainly helps. And then for some of those brick and mortar casino, retail outlet casinos, that, you know, may be slower to come back, I think it is definitely a viable option then for them to have some sort of online sportsbook and or casino.
So you have lots of conversations with, you know, you have clients that are leagues, that are teams, where 6 months ago, 3 months ago, this was a really high priority for them. Now they're just trying to get the doors back, some doors back open. I mean, you know, not even mm-hmm. necessarily their own doors, but the possibility of, you know, baseball going and opening in a handful of locations, or the NBA going to a single location and finishing out its season and playing a playoffs or a tournament, the NHL. Everybody's having those same conversations. I have to suspect that, you know, sports betting is kind of on the back burner there, or is it something that can easily be pivoted back to? Like, if you start playing again, well, this is one of our content options. How do you think it'll be viewed?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, everyone is struggling. Let's start with the first piece, which is reopening up. What does that look like? What are the new safety protocols? You know, it's so interesting to me because I do feel like there's so many parallels between sports and the casino industry in the sense of large entertainment venues, thousands of people that come in every day, that sit close to one another, that are touching cash, that are interacting with employees, food and beverage. And so, you know, I think it'll be really interesting to see not only obviously the safety protocols that are put in place, because I think that they're going to be pretty similar, but also potentially some of the innovations that we see that happen as a result of this. There's been a big push by the casino industry, for example, to go into a cashless based system.
Right.
Probably one of the, I know for sure it's one of the last industries that actually, you know, uses a lot of cash. And again, I don't think that's very dissimilar than from in an entertainment venue, a sports venue that is, you know, moving to more cashless based systems. Mm-hmm. So again, I think a lot of interesting parallels and correlations, and so that's one piece of it. When it pertains to actually, okay, look, we're going to be in this probably limbo state for quite some time. Now, no one knows how long that's going to be, but you know, where we're either playing sports and they have no spectators, and you know, vice versa, where maybe some of the casinos are open but it's very limited. Where do the fans go? You know, how is it going to be consumed? Where are you going to make up that revenue if you're not getting it through ticket sales, or you're not getting it through a slot machine in a brick and mortar location?
Right.
You know, I think the natural sort of transaction or to occur then would be something that would happen through a mobile platform. And, you know, I think that any team or any league that has not, you know, started to think about that will be behind the curve, because I feel like there is a great opportunity then, because I think sports betting has always been viewed as the greatest fan engagement tool out there for teams and leagues to take advantage of. And if you have a bunch of people who are stuck at home in quarantine and they are going to be jonesing now for the next live event that comes on, it would be, I think, a total missed opportunity if you are not trying to take advantage of the fact that you've got this fan engagement tool that, you know, they can participate in while they're watching that game. So those conversations are continuing. I think, you know, everyone is, I think, respectful of the place financially where everyone's finding themselves. But, you know, I know that there's a lot of planning around what it's going to look like once things do reopen.
Well, you think about the jonesing, you know, think about what just happened with the Last Dance, which I think people had very optimistic expectations for ratings, and it exceeded those expectations.
Right.
You know, with 6 million viewers, there's now some optimism around what this draft could be like as a sports betting event. What do you think that looks like?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's going to be that this will obviously set new records as far as the amount of money being wagered on the event. I mean, you know, as far as the technical components are concerned, I'm sure there'll be some hiccups, but look, we're all learning. We're all trying to figure this out. I think that, again, what this does is it drives more of that partnership between the league and the gaming operators. I know that the NFL has launched a couple free-to-play games with their partners, I think through ESPN and
right,
Caesars,
right,
and DraftKings and Fox. And so, you know, that's a great opportunity to acclimate and acquire new customers while they're watching the draft. So, it's a great, I think, dipping the toe in the water into hopefully a much more robust, you know, relationship and partnership then between the league and the operators.
All right. So we've got this draft ahead of us. Lots of optimism. Let's go back, though. Once this draft is over, we're going to be back in that other world, right? Is that other world working for the sports books? Is there handle around any of that stuff, for example? Are people actually, and I remember in the early days of it, I asked Joe Asher about that, and he's like, not much, but I think it's grown. What does it look like now?
Yeah. I mean, I had an operator tell me that the table tennis, the Russian table tennis, had generated about a third of the same sports betting revenue they were generating in a month. So the desire is certainly still there. And maybe we'll unlock some new gems for the operators to add to their portfolio of offerings.
All right. Sarah Slane, thanks so much for helping us unpack the impact of the virus on sports betting as we head into the NFL draft. Be healthy and safe.
You too.
SBJ Unpacks is now its own podcast. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for real-time discussions about the biggest topics in sports business. You can find links in our show notes below.